Welcome to Juicebox Radio on 101.9 FM CITR, or maybe you're one of our podcast listeners. However you've come to spend this hour with us, we're glad to have you. Most people use the internet to indulge in sexual endeavors, but there's webcams, there's chat rooms, and networking sites. Cybersex is growing in popularity. Pornography downloads are quite mainstream these days. It's not just the dark and obscure these days. But sometimes your walk through the cyber world can turn down a dark path. Tonight's show focuses on protecting yourself and your children and what you can do and how you can be responsible and keep yourself away from sexual internet predators. If you want to contribute to the conversation, you can call us at 604-UBC-CITR or you can email us at juiceboxradio.com.
I can't find my thing. I'm trying to train Caroline because I won't be here next week. Steve Dotto, executive producer, writer, and host of Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech,
is joining us tonight. What an amazing guest we have on tonight, Caroline.
Yes.
Amazing. I'm sorry, it's right over there. There it is. Good Lord, here we go. Since Dotto Tech is committed to helping you, the average Canadian, take advantage of all of the wondrous technology out there without getting bogged down in bytes, and bits and acronyms, Caroline really wanted to have him join us in this discussion tonight. Thank you so much, Steve, for being here.
It's my pleasure.
So, stalkers are quite the topic of today, aren't they?
We were discussing things earlier. We won't go into full-on details.
I definitely have had a few. A few too many, actually. And I think anyone who maybe goes on Facebook as much as Caroline and I do.
I know, we're addicted. And self-confessed others. Addicts. And I'm sure many of our listeners out there are addicts as well.
Yeah, well, you know, there's all this talk about the CIA owning this Facebook and all kinds of people being screwed out of their privacy. And
what do you think of this conspiracy?
Yes, Steve,
I think
please.
It's a conspiracy theory. It's not true.
You don't think it's true?
No, I'm sorry. You know, there's other bad things we can work out in the world, but Facebook is not owned by the CIA. That's not a big issue.
Darn, I was all like into the drama of that. I love that story. I was always telling everybody because I'm such a conspiracy theorist myself. I know, I admit it's not really something to be proud of, but I am. The stalker conversation, though, I think tonight, let's just talk very briefly about stalkers. They can be scary. I've had few, and I think you've had some as well.
I've had several. I've still got several.
Right. Well, mine, I guess I can be quite a bitch. So somehow I've managed to scare them off with my assertive personality. So assertiveness works. And, you know, shutting your blinds and not answering your telephone, changing your address, not putting too much information on Facebook. What would you suggest to help?
Well, what I suggest to help, it's all about how much access you give people to information. I mean, it depends when the stalking starts. If it's somebody coming from the blue that just finds you online, that becomes that's a whole different story than if it's somebody that you know that you've had a relationship that you break up with that has access to your intimate details already. One of the things that people can do is they just have to be very careful about who they make friends and how they make their profile available. Facebook, the whole nature behind Facebook is it's permission-based. It's not quite the same as MySpace and some of the other things where people can find you a lot more easily. And Facebook, if somebody wants to be your friend, if they want to do more than just see that little thumbnail photo of you, you have control over them never gaining access to you at all. So it's how you set your permissions.
Yes.
And one of the first things you can do is you can say, nobody except my friends can see my profile.
Right,
so they have to poke you or become your friend before they can gain access to any more information other than your photo. And you can also maybe not make the photo quite is alluring.
Well, I think this poking thing isn't really get them access either. Just
what
they have to be friends.
Thing?
They
all
have to be friends.
They've
got
me.
To be friends. Like, just the poking is not
poking
enough.
Poking is very irritating.
It is very irritating, mm-hmm. And it's just like, okay.
Here's the idea behind the poke. some people don't put their real photo on Facebook, so they just say, here's Steve Dotto. I mean, there might be 35 Steve Dottos. I don't know. So you say, I went to school with Steve Dotto. I want to find him again. And maybe I put a picture of me as a Martian up so you can't tell it's really me. So you think that might be the Steve Dotto that I want to be friends with or that I was friends with, but I'm not sure. So rather than try and make him friends and suddenly be engaged in a relationship with somebody you don't know, you can poke me. And you can say, hey, Steve, is that you? Is that you? And then I get the poke and I go, oh, yeah, Caroline, I remember you. And then we can become friends. It's the post-friend poking that's such an issue.
Yes.
It becomes very irritating.
Yes, it does. And I always ignore them every time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, ignore poke, ignore
poke,
ignore
poke. Some people think that she or he who pokes last wins in the life. And you got to let them win.
Whatever. If I had a cock, I'd be poking as much as I could. But anyway, the point is that on Facebook, please stop poking. It's very annoying. All right.
Is it true if you respond to a poke and you poke them back, they can actually see your whole profile?
That's the other thing about it is, is once you poke them, they have a period of, I think, 4 days or a week or something like that where they can see your profile. So, and also, when you ask somebody to be your friend, they can see your profile. So it's a way of checking to see if that's the person that you really think they are. So
With
the poke, you can see the profile. God. But you can also have a limited profile. You can say that any people that poke me, I've got two profiles. People that contact me on the show, they get to see our TV show pictures. They get to see my fishing pictures. But they don't get to see pictures of my niece's wedding, for example. They don't get to see my email address. They don't get to find out the real things. Right. Well, my friends do, the real inner circle of friends. So having multiple levels of profiles is a great idea in Facebook.
I thought you could only have the two choices. Anyway,
okay. Yeah, it is two. Multiple is two.
Okay, well, this is amazing that we have you, Steve Dotto, on our show. Like, wow, telling us how to protect ourselves from all the crazy people
And there's lots
there.
Of crazy people out there.
Let's just quickly...
We're two of them.
I'm not that crazy.
I'm not sure I should be flattered as a... Anyways.
Well, thankfully, I don't
Knowing
have a penis.
About being crazy.
All I know. All right. So there are some crime statistics. I mean, I'd say that 1 in 12 women will have been stalked in their lifetime. I know actually personally four women that have been stalked and only one man. He was stalked by a man. So I don't know. Maybe it's a male thing. I don't know.
Apparently it is a male thing, and it's 1 in 45 men, actually.
It's a crime thing, and crimes tend to be... Mostly, I'd say three-quarters of crimes or more are done by men. So we can have another show about that, but
Definitely.
That's not the show tonight. So a stalker tends to exhibit a familiar pattern of behavior, and we were talking earlier a few minutes ago that stalking often starts as a result of rejection. I think that that's one of the biggest causes of stalking is this rejection rage, the abandonment issues that motivates people to sort of seek revenge and get into the stalking behavior. And, you know, sometimes stalkers, they tend to be loners. They tend to be a bit socially inept. They tend to become obsessed with their target.
There's a reason they were rejected?
There's a reason. Although I've dated a few stalkers. I mean, two out of the six Dans ended up being stalkers. So, you know...
Maybe it's something in the name. Although we do have Dan Six on next week, so maybe I shouldn't say that loud.
Anyway, internet stalking is a whole different thing. So the internet offers these new opportunities for stalking, hence the term cyber stalking. And you probably know a lot about that. I don't know, but we're going to talk tonight on Juicebox about a little bit about sort of the sort of psychology of stalking. But more importantly, we're going to be utilizing our fabulous guest's intelligence on and his knowledge and experience on sort of how to protect yourself. Importantly, how to protect your children, teens, a parent's guide later in the show. So make sure that you stay tuned for the whole hour. And of course, call in if you've got anything intelligent to add to the conversation. That would be great.
I love how you said that about the intelligence factor.
We've had some issues with some bad callers lately. We love you callers, but can you please call on the break and not in the middle of the hour when we're like, the parking is actually this way and that. Okay.
So. Exactly. Directions on how to get here. But considering we've got our guests here, hopefully we won't need to worry about that, which is a good thing.
I'm good at filling.
I like filling.
Feelings, no fillings.
Yeah. In terms of getting, in terms of putting stuff up on, say, Facebook or whatever, we were talking a little bit earlier.
MySpace. Kind of thing, yep.
Or even like a webcam thing we were talking about earlier, because I know in, I work personally like with women in the downtown east side a lot, and a lot of my girls are sex workers, and we were talking a little bit before the show about how you're saying...
Well, here's the difference. Here's the difference with social networking, with blogs, with all of the sort of persistent information that we now create online. If we made a mistake, if I, as a kid, made a mistake, maybe, for example, a young girl, 14, 15, 16-year-old girl, becomes a webcam girl for a period of time, and so she spends 2 or 3 years as a webcam girl, and there's been hundreds or thousands of people who have had sessions with her. Well, all of a sudden, there's all of this data that's been captured and is out there. If we go back 15 years, if the same girl had had issues with her parents and left home and lived on the street for 3 years and been a prostitute on the street, then somebody had rescued her. Somebody had come and found her and said, look, you can put this behind you. Mm-hmm. You can go on for a productive life because you can literally recreate yourself. She could do that. A woman that does it today, a woman that makes a mistake or makes some decisions today that become persistent information, like these images would be, these videos and these photos, that will haunt her for the rest of her life, because she'll be walking down the aisle at her wedding and somebody will be sniggering in 15 years, in 10 years from now, when this is long past. She, some cretin in her job that's competing in a job for her in 15 years is going to research this and find this out when she's up for a promotion at some point. It becomes part of the public record. And this is what's really scary. And this is the issue.
Part of the public record.
Well, that's really what happens. A photograph of a kid, 17 years old, put up on YouTube. And let's say that I've got a video that I show in a lot of my talks of a young man in Maple Ridge. It's a weekend in the Ridge with so-and-so. And he puts his name up on the video. And in the video at that moment, he wants to show himself skateboarding and hanging with his buddies and all this kind of stuff, which is all fine. And it's all fun and fairly harmless stuff. But when he puts up his name in the title, guess what he's doing? He's sucking on a bong. Well, as he exhales the smoke, his name comes up. And I pause the video at that point, and I just look at the audience and I say, he's never going to be an RCMP officer. He's never going to be a border guard. He's never going to serve in the Canadian military. He's 17 years old, and he's a never war. He's never going to be a teacher. He might never be able to cross the border.
Not bondable, that kind of thing.
He's limiting himself. Now, who's responsible? Which one of us doesn't have that photograph in our past? But it's not part of the public record. It's something that's just in our past. It can't be in our present because it's not going to be brought up. And the odd time with politicians and stuff, we see that stuff dredged up. Well, think of how easy it's going to be to dredge this up. Because even if you remove this from the internet, even if you take the video down, it's still there. It's been
archived. It's cached.
It's cached. It's archived.
Yeah.
They're archiving the internet all the time.
Yeah.
So that information is there. So, and universities in the States are now searching kids' blogs. They're searching their MySpace pages. They're searching for YouTube information on them before they're accepting them as students. Employers are searching people's...
I didn't know that.
Yes. Employers are searching before they accept employees. So
a lot of down-taking to do after
that. Me too.
Oh, my God.
Well, in some cases, it's going to be too late.
Should we take down
Probably.
Bill's photos?
There goes a lot of photos. I need to take down a lot of photos and videos. Yes,
so,
I do.
So you're not going to be prime minister.
Yes, I'm not going to be prime minister. And maybe I won't be educating your children either.
More is the shame. But you're an adult, and you made some decisions yourself.
And my parents would be like, yes, see? Finger wagging. Julia, we told you. That's okay. Maybe it'll make me famous one day. I'll get on Oprah and say, see this woman who did all these things that were really bad and stupid?
And
then she wrote this great book, and she still succeeded in life.
You're creating your own adversity to overcome. That's a creative way to approach that.
I'll use this podcast as an example in my video book, yes.
At any rate, whose responsibility is it to... Are 17-year-old kids supposed to understand the ramifications of their actions? I don't think so. It's up to the adult community. And here's the challenge. The adult community is intimidated by social networking. We go in...
Adult over 30, what do you mean?
Yeah. Well, anybody that's like
over
a kid.
Over 19?
Well, no, not over 19, but definitely as you get into the late 30s and 40s, you're going to be intimidated by it because it's like going to your... It's like now, if any one of us in this room... would go to a high school dance. To a certain extent, we're going to be intimidated by the culture. We don't feel comfortable. We don't know how to dress. We don't know how to act. Well, MySpace is the domain of kids. And so adults going in, even though you can't be recognized, all of a sudden it dredges up these emotions that we used to have as kids of inadequacy, of not fitting in. And we don't like those because we're an adult now. We're strong. We're so
confident. We know who we are.
And we know what to do. We leave.
So, back home into our own networks exactly. that we know who knows us. And
so now, what happens when we leave? All of a sudden, our kids are spending 2, 3, 4 hours a day, the youth is, in this place where there's no adults watching. I kind of liken it to having a gymnasium in a high school that adults don't go into, but kids can spend 3 or 4 hours a day. And some of the sites, like Nexopia, are really meat markets. MySpace, to a certain extent. At least MySpace has the music side. Mm-hmm. Nexopia is all about meeting people and is all about cybering and is all about that kind of stuff. It's quite difficult. Whereas MySpace, the reason I love MySpace so much is adults feel comfortable and they can get a feel for what can happen. They can get a feel for the culture. In Facebook. Sorry, in Facebook. I said MySpace. But Facebook is one that's really comfortable and accessible to adults. Plus, Facebook's start was such a mature beginning compared to the other social networking sites.
In what way?
Well, it started in academics. It started only become a member if your college or your university signed up, and then so students. So it started with a culture of fairly mature users already. They were already university age, and then it's trickled down a little bit to some high schools, and then it opened up to the rest of the population. So most of us were introduced to it through our college-aged kids. And that's where most people started to get involved. That's how I got involved. My eldest daughter is just graduated from Mount Allison in New Brunswick. And I would go back regularly and visit her and see her shows and stuff like that. She was involved in theater back there. And I became friends with a lot of her friends. And all of a sudden, when I signed up for MySpace, all of a sudden all her friends out there were my friends. My first 10 or 12 friends were all from New Brunswick, and they were all kids. But they were kids that I already had a relationship with, and I liked to know what was going on, and they liked my opinion on things. So, we were friends already. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the next wave of friends were her high school friends who were still living in my community, and I still saw fairly regularly. But I still, would say, hey, how you doing? What's new in your life? And I knew what they were doing in school. I love the fact that if you engage in it properly, it gives you friends in all ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In ways that you could never normally socialize. And here's that's a great benefit. But it could also be a great harm. There could be a lot of harm involved.
Yeah, there can be when it's abused. But when it's out in the light of day, when people are using it, when they're engaging with it, then we come up with coping mechanisms to deal with it. People think that the biggest dangers of social networking sites are sexual predation or bullying. Those are the ones that get all the press. The guy who lures the kid to the bus station to come to Montreal to become a prostitute from Vancouver, right? That's the horror story. That's every parent's fear. Well, there's always been sexual predators, and we as a society have figured out ways to cope with them. We've dealt with it. And there's always been bullies. We have coping mechanisms for dealing with bullies. So that part of the thing is in our frame of reference. Not that we're always successful in doing it, but we at least understand the concept. People haven't been able to destroy their lives by making, not as easily by making bad decisions at 17 years old or at 14 years old as they can now. A mistake mm-hmm. with drugs, you can overcome that. With sex, you can overcome that. When you make a mistake on the net, there's the chance that you can never overcome it. We don't have a coping mechanism for that yet.
We certainly don't have the intelligence we need or the information and education.
I wouldn't say the intelligence. We don't have the experience we need.
That's sort of what I meant. Yes, good. Thank you. I seem to be stuck on the I word tonight. So you're going to be teaching us a little bit about this in the show, aren't you? About how to gain that knowledge, the experience that we need to sort of guide our lives. I'm going to send this podcast to all of my parents that are friends.
I hope I can. It's a little difficult when we don't have... I'm used to on my show, pointing at a site and pointing and saying, clicking here and say, read this and doing that sort of stuff. But we can certainly walk through a lot of the basics of it. And I think we're starting to get there already. We're starting to... The thing is the most important thing for everybody is engage with the technology. And, there's a lot of fun that you can have in the technology. You talked about, the fact that off the top that a lot of people are finding their lives really enriched by this stuff. I don't think we should throw that baby out with the bathwater. I love social networking. When it comes down to it, at the end of the day, kids today who are graduating from university will never lose touch with the friends that they want to stay in touch with. Which one of us can say this? I mean, we didn't have this in our
family. No.
So what's that going to mean to their future? If you suddenly, you go to that reunion 25 years after you graduated from college and you meet somebody that's now moved to Ottawa and you say, man, we should have stayed together because all the stuff that you're doing, there's so much synergy with what I'm doing. We could have made a fortune. Well, now you can make that fortune because you're going to be staying in touch. You're going to be engaged with each other's lives. Yeah. I think that's magic.
It is. It's amazing. Yeah, and even just the Point Grey reunion on Facebook, it all came together in the last 2 months. None of us had any idea who anybody was. And thanks to Facebook, now we're having a 20-year reunion in September, and it's all come together purely through Facebook. And there's like 50 of us from my graduating class, and that would never have happened. I mean,
there's
so many benefits that can come of it. And like you're saying, networking is very powerful, very important, I think, for success, for remembering who you are, for just, you know, if you decide to move to Ottawa and you have no friends, you wait a minute, I know someone from so-and-so, I think, move there, and just to be in touch with them. So there's so many amazing benefits that can come from
and that whole reunion internet, thing might become a thing of the past. I'm wondering if my daughter's graduating or high school graduating classes today are going to feel as compelled to get together for their 10-year reunion.
There's always reason for good party and for getting those people out of the woodwork that maybe have kids and they're like, I'm wrinkled and old and never got anywhere.
Maybe they'll do other things than look at each other's face and go, oh, you've gotten fat, because they'll have known they've gotten fat if they've been put up true pictures.
That's true.
Although we have photo retouching, which you can use. It can modify someone's thickness quite a bit, I imagine. So.
Thank God for Photoshop.
Yes, amen. Amen. Some of the cameras do it right now, right within it.
We can Photoshop the bong picture right out of that 17-year-old. He'd have been smart here, but I've gotten that one out. Anyway, all right. So some tips. I know definitely in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking. I'm sorry, I'm cutting everything. How to sort of do a networking guide for parents, and also I think for everybody. Very important in the second half of the show, but I think sort of how to keep strangers away. We talked a little bit about that.
If you're looking for some practical advice on that, I, not having been really stalked by anybody normal in my life, the stalkers for
you only had abnormal stalkers.
Oh. It was stalkers for computer television show hosts are atypical, I would say. But let's think about some things that you.
Of course,
I want to
hear stories.
Well, I'm not too sure what can happen. I'm not too sure. How you deal with it individually. You would probably be able to certainly talk a lot more about how you program at, how you go through the process of dealing with it. But here's some things that I'm pretty sure you shouldn't do. I'm pretty sure you shouldn't be doing things like deleting their emails to you and deleting their text messages to you from your phone because you feel uncomfortable that they're there.
So keep a paper trail.
At some point, you're going to be going to law enforcement. You're going to be dealing with things. And as hard as it is to have them there, which I imagine the immediate reaction is to get rid of it so that it doesn't bother you, so it doesn't haunt you, but that's a very valuable trail for any law enforcement if you actually have to ultimately deal with it. And you got to look at it responsibly at the end of the day. You've got, not only do you have your responsibility yourself for dealing with it effectively, but you have the responsibility of dealing with it for the next person that this person becomes infatuated with. So you've got, if you've got the clarity of thought to be able to deal with it, to be able to look at the situation and come up with a strategy to deal with it both emotionally, which I can't speak to because that's not my job, but certainly technically capturing the information, making sure that you keep the paper trail, documenting it so that you can present it appropriately.
That's a good point. I always delete them because I don't want to be reminded.
Well, and I can understand that. And I can understand that. But you have to. It's going to happen, right? It's like, I've been hurt anyways. I know it happened. You can shuffle it off to the side. You can put it in a different folder. You can save it on your phone as opposed to having it in. If you're getting text messages, all phones will save text messages. So save them. And then there's software you can plug your phone into your computer that you can back all your text messages up onto your computer. You can do that kind of thing. So you don't have to necessarily have it right in front of you and you have the reminder all the time.
Good idea.
But you should definitely keep, because all that information has metadata built into it so they can tell exactly who it was from, when it was from, all that kind of stuff. And you need that information.
What about things if they keep sending you friend requests on Facebook, but they're also getting in touch with you in other ways? Because I usually just hit delete I've got one particular stalker that continues to do that, and I just hit delete or ignore, rather.
Now, isn't there a place in Facebook that you can go in that you
and
can
block.
Say and block them completely?
Mm-hmm. I haven't found that yet.
Yeah. At that point, there, it's not. If they're sending that, thing through, I'm not sure that's going to. That becomes just plain irritating after a period of time. And it's the rest of the pattern that really gets, because they're not really gaining access to you. They're just trying to at that point. Right?
Yes.
And they aren't really haunting you at that point. So yeah, I would go into Facebook settings and you can set it up for block on all of, or you're saying this was a MySpace one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can block it.
What about if you do something silly, like say you post for photos and somebody else posts them up? I know you can untag your photos on Facebook. I'm more familiar with that networking site than any other one. But what about, say, they're on Flickr, or say you're Paris Hilton, for example, and, you know, your boyfriend's taking all these pictures of yourself, and next thing you know, the whole world knows about it.
Honestly, you're screwed.
Really?
I'm afraid so.
Don't let your friends take pictures of you.
I think that's probably really good advice.
I have a rule, and I have had this rule for I don't know how many years, but I don't let people take pictures of me holding any drinks.
Good idea.
You have a very hard time finding a picture of me holding a drink.
Really?
So, and every time someone's camera comes out, the drink goes down, and I pose, and there's maybe two I know of that are out there with me holding a kokanee going, you know, and whatever. And I'm like, damn, because of course it's not mine. And I, you know, it was a weak moment. So like the bong, like whatever else, I just, something told me that, you know, it wasn't classy. There was going to come back to me. I don't know. Like, unless it's a glass of champagne at a wedding or a martini with, you know, a whatever, something
I've got
special.
Martini glasses, just the, you know, whole breakfast just, at Tiffany's thing.
It's just like, you know,
a little black dress and the hair up.
You don't want to look like a big trash whore, is really, because I could easily look like that. Right?
It's always been one of my concerns.
Anyone who's listening
to
knows
your friends online as well. About a couple weeks ago, somebody was mentioning to me that if I've got mine set up as limited profile on Facebook, for example, just because of all my stalkers. Mm-hmm. I sound like I have so many. I've only got two, but with that you could
seems
actually
to be a fairly high number, actually.
I suppose so. But how to protect your friends? Because one of my friends mentioned that you could actually click on and you could actually view my friends, which I haven't figured out how to block that yet.
Well, there's settings within Facebook.
Privacy settings.
Yeah, in your privacy settings is where you're going to set that. So don't allow people that have your limited profile to see your friend list.
Okay.
That's,
you can set that up. Yeah, those are all. In going through those settings, as you go through it, I mean, if you take the time to look in, and there's several places that privacy and those things are set within Facebook, but mainly within your settings. If you take time to think your way through it, you can make some really good choices. But, you know, here's what, I'm not sure if we said in the screen room, I think we didn't mention it on air, but before you put anything on Facebook or on MySpace or any social networking site, maybe ask yourself a few questions. Ask yourself, is this something that I'm happy with my best friend seeing? And more importantly, is this information that I wouldn't mind my worst enemy gaining access to? Think about
Very
that for a second.
Question.
Is this something that I'm happy with my spouse or my boyfriend or my former boyfriend or my future boyfriend or the government having access to? And if you say, no, I don't really feel comfortable with those people getting that information, then don't post it. Don't include it. It's not a contest of who puts the most about themselves online. It's about connecting in a comfortable way.
I like that. Well, how often would you recommend doing a Google search on yourself just to see if...
depends how big an ego you have, I suppose.
Is it a good thing to do before you do a job search?
Are you disappointed when you don't find things about yourself?
I find a lot about myself, unfortunately.
I guess it's kind of like doing your own credit check. It's probably... The question, can you do anything about it? So, I mean, if you want to be forewarned before, is forearmed, you know, going into a job interview or something like that, fine, you know, knock yourself out. People are, you know, where companies and corporations are searching for information on people beforehand, you know, if you're out there, you better be prepared to answer the questions or preemptively, you know, discuss them right up front in your job interview. I guess it's a good idea. I never really thought about it before, but it's, you know, now that you mention it, because I don't really apply for a lot of jobs.
Fair enough. You've got your own show.
So, and I actually have never really done Google searches on any of my employees either, to be honest. Maybe I should be a little more careful, but I tend to trust people. I'm kind of trusting from my nature. But yeah, I mean, it's a good exercise, I guess. That's probably good advice.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Well,
you just got a horrific look on
your face. I'm just freaking out. I think it's time for a break. I'm looking on my Facebook privacy settings and realizing that the whole world has been seeing me, and all these people that have been lined up actually to be in my profile that I rejected as friends are still able to see a whole bunch of stuff because they requested in the first place.
Really?
So even though I rejected them. So I recommend you go through Facebook privacy settings and look very, very, very carefully through all of your different settings and make some very good decisions for yourself.
I may need to do the same
thanks
thing.
Thanks to Steve.
Thank
who's
you.
Just been so fabulous. I think that we're going to take a quick break right now and...
We'll be back.
Yeah, 101.9 FM CITR. This is what you're listening to. Juicebox Radio is the special programming happening for this hour between 10 and 11 on Wednesday night. And we have a very special guest, Steve Dotto. Am I saying that right?
Yes, you're right. Dotto. Yep.
And he has an amazing TV show. Caroline McGillivray, our fabulous co-host on the show, has brought him in tonight. I have to thank you so much for producing the show. I've been talking the whole time. So the second half of the show, I'm hoping to leave in your capable hands. And in the meantime, we're going to listen to some random music because I have no idea what it's going to sound like. And that music is The Long Blondes' Someone to Drive You Home from the album That's Someone to Drive You Home. Only Lovers Are Left Alive.
That sounds very sexy.
Kind of good for the old stalker show. All right, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
To look if I was sure that you were happy together. But I've seen the way she covers her chest up as if it was a national treasure. Looks are the first weapon, charm is the second. I reckon that she doesn't have much of either. You don't need her, it's better that you come and see it by me. No, I won't.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, well, you know what?
We are back.
We're back, and we had a caller, a couple callers in the break there. But first, I want to just do a quick little juice berry here. The iDeck9 Generation Conference is coming up. Bent Umbrella Queer Performing Arts Society is going to be doing a fabulous international performance showcase, workshops, panels, presentations, pretty much like a conference for gender benders of all kinds, and I'm really excited about it. This will be the first of many talks on this particular conference. I'm excited. What is it? Caroline's making... I can't believe you're making a face right now. I'm so super stoked.
I'm not making a face.
She's going to be announcing it next week on Juiceberries as well, and I will be back talking a little bit more about it as I find out more information as we go. But you can get information and tickets at iDike Vancouver, and that is idkevancouver.com for information. info@idikevancouver.com. Please be in touch with them for tickets and info. All right. And we have some kind of message here.
Just people are posting on my Facebook wall as we're talking.
Steve's Facebook wall says, "Here, here, I just turned into your talk on CITR all about at about halfway through, and I totally agree. I find a lot of and
well,
for
we
next,
have to. I'd have to. No, I'd have to.
Oh, wrote something on
I'm
your
gonna
wall.
I'm going to ask you how to fix that later because I don't know how to get to the next page whenever I have those sent
to
me.
You just have to reply.
All right, so we have a caller, and I think we'll just take him on. So, Caroline, you just pull this little thing up with the phone, and you touch it on air, and you have that on, and you say, "Hi, caller, are you with us?"
Hi, caller, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. It's Peter.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for calling. What is your question on tonight's show? We're talking about, we didn't even get back to the fact that we are on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver and that we are speaking with Steve Dotto.
Dotto.
Okay, Dotto. First, I don't know why I can't get that.
First, I want to thank you for talking about this topic in a way that's not inducing hysteria about, you know, internet predators and things like that. You know, it's been very sane and non-hysterical so far, so that's good. The second thing
don't like hysteria, Peter? We like hysteria.
Well, hysteria can be fun and
thank you, Hank. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to bring up is the idea that maybe all this information being saved about people online will sort of change standards of what people consider unusual or a problem. So if you happen to have something embarrassing on YouTube about, you know, you did when you were crazy and 17, does it matter? Maybe like all the other people you're competing with for the same job will also have something embarrassing about them on the web, or, you know, that they did some, you know, exotic dancing or something to make ends meet in the past or something to that effect. Maybe that what we're seeing is sort of the standard shifting.
I think, you know, I think you're close on what you're saying, but I'm not sure people are going to find that we all have, you know, issues that like that. What is going to happen, I think, a lot more with the social networking sites are people who don't fit in quite as well in other segments of society are going to find it much easier to find their niche, to find their groups, because there are so many different groups, there are so many different ways to engage with others that you can, that people who have... Who enjoy something that's a little bit different, a little bit kind of on the fringe, are going to definitely find it easier to connect and become part of a social network of people who are like-minded.
Yeah. That's like Cory Doctorow said, the internet encourages people to be weird.
I kind of, that's one of the comments that I kind of wanted to make, was that that was what I was trying to get at, was that I think that the internet allows us this kind of freedom, which, as I think you're talking about, Steve, tonight, is going to hit us, kick us in the butt later, but we all seem to sort of feel so much freedom on the internet, and we want to sort of fully express ourselves, and there's just so few realms that we can do that in society, embodied in society, meaning like in our actual real bodies, you know, acting it out in our bodies, out there in the real world. Yeah. So it seems kind of almost sad to me, and I kind of felt like, oh, now you got to watch everything you do on the internet too, like, oh.
You're probably talking a little bit like an extension of the internet chat phenomenon, where people would quickly fall in love, or because they could chat with somebody and they could be who they wanted to be or who they thought the other person wanted to be, and there was this kind of the veil of secrecy that the internet gave them. You didn't have to be a 230-pound person; you could be a 140-pound person when you're talking to the person at the other end of the line. So that whole wall where you could invent your own identity,
an avatar.
Yeah, basically, you know, that's part of it. And there's a certain magic to that. There's a certain freedom to that. But you know, in the end of the world, you still have to learn to live in the real world. So the maturing process, the fact that social networking sites allow people to now, you know, get together and say, you know, I like this, you know, this is the sort of thing that excites me, that engages me, and they they can find people that share that with them. I think that's going to be pretty powerful and profound as time goes on. It should be quite enabling. And unfortunately, you know, there's a yin to a yang. It's also going to be distancing. The fact that people who you might have to live with in your own real social network can gain access to some information about some of the things that you like that they might not consider quite as cool or quite as acceptable. There's going to be that challenge of dealing with that and accepting that in yourself as well.
Yeah. There's a case back in 2002 of a guy who was a big name in the New England SM community, and the Washington Post outed him on the front page just when he was about to go to Iraq to look for weapons of mass destruction. And, it wasn't a secret. He just, somebody Googled his name and found out that he was doing this. But it was a huge controversy. Guy's name was Jack McGeorge.
He's been outed again.
Yeah.
Well,
I think,
thank you, caller, for your comments. And thanks for listening to Juicebox.
No problem. I'm enjoying it.
Right on.
Thanks.
So I just wanted to say, I think that there's some choices that you make too, Steve, and you had mentioned, that there's some choices that you make, there's pictures that you can put up that aren't gonna, who would you want your worst enemy to see or not see or whatever. So I think that those were some really good comments, that people need to kind of consider. It's like, okay, well, I don't want to be completely anal about everything, so I'm going to allow myself to sort of look like this crazy party girl who wears costumes sometimes. And if I can explain that to my professional circles if I need to, then that's a safe thing to have out there.
That's what you're going to be comfortable with, exactly. I mean, you got to choose what face you're going to present to the public. And, here's where friends can start to help. I mean, understanding people who are farther along in the path understand the impact of technology a little more effectively than their friends. You should be able to trust your friends enough to be able to say, hey, you shouldn't, that's not the best Facebook profile picture to be putting up. You want to consider what you're putting forward. And some people will choose to ignore that advice. I mean, advice is exactly what it's worth, right? So you can take a bit of responsibility for your friends too. And if you're farther down, if you're a little more experienced, you can tell them to think about it. And you can maybe point out an example of how it's going to look to somebody coming in from the outside.
All right, well, let's talk about this parents' guide thing. I think it's very powerful.
What can we do to protect them?
Okay. Parents, my generation, which is the late baby boomers, we're a pretty interesting position. We've got children, and then our parents are devolving into children before our very eyes. And so we're a generation that's defined by change, and we've experienced a lot of change, and we're pretty much tired of change, and men especially don't accept change all that well. We sometimes have issues with it, which I'm sure has been a topic of your show in the past. So,
yes, it has.
Into this world of change, our kids all of a sudden embrace technology and engage in it at a much more rapid rate than we're ever. And actually, Don Tapscott pointed out when he talked about the Net Generation, this group of kids that have grown up on the internet, that for the first time in history, that our youth has a skill which is germane to society far in excess of their parents. Historically, parents have taught their kids to farm, to go and kill animals to eat, to cook,
clean
to make
house,
clothes. We've had in every definable important social area or societal area, adults were vastly superior to children. We were stronger, we were smarter, we knew how to do things. All of a sudden, we reach a point where a 14-year-old kid knows more about how the internet works than the parent. And so this shift in responsibility, the shift in skill sets, is something very difficult for parents to overcome. And we're intimidated by it because we don't learn. Our minds aren't as flexible and we don't learn as quickly. So the natural tendency is to give the kids their due, be proud of our kids that they can do it, and then let them go on. But the problem is they're still kids. Mm-hmm. Just because they know how to click a mouse and they know how to move around on the internet and they understand the lingo better than we do, doesn't abjure us of responsibilities as a parent for taking care of them. So it's not an easy route. We have to engage. We have to go and we have to do this stuff. And some of us think it's a waste of time. We don't understand the reasons that we were there. We aren't enjoying ourselves on it. So we don't find the muse within us to enjoy
it. And the value. And like the importance of it.
Yeah. So consequently, we're dismissing it and we're not engaging in it properly, so we're not understanding what our kids are going through. So, I mean, there's some very simple guidelines, Caroline. We talked about them earlier. Mm-hmm. You got to have your computer in a public place. You can't let your kids have their computer up in their room because that you've got to be able to look over their shoulder and see what's happening. And, you know, this all began with just texting, you know, with just basically yes, MSN yes, going yeah. back and forth. But it's gone way beyond MSN now because of how social networking has evolved. See, one of the keys about social networking you have to understand is it's not just a site that people go and visit, but there's a whole technology underneath it called RSS, which is really simple subscription. When you post your what's happening in your thoughts, if you were to say post on your, what is it called in Facebook? Your
status?
Status. I'm horny today. Well, it's one thing if just people who come to visit your website see that you posted I'm horny today. But because of really simple subscription, it's then taken, it's digested by the Facebook engine, mm-hmm. and then it's distributed to everybody who's on your friends list. And that's what happens, that's what you see in the news feed, is it's yes. an RSS feed of anything changing in your life. So the things that you say there are going to be distributed. It's going to be pushed out to the community at large. So understanding that that's happening is something that's fairly sophisticated. It's something that most of us don't really get right away. But that's all happening underlying. So it's not just peer-to-peer texting back and forth in MSN chat in that danger. Now we're broadcasting our thoughts. We're broadcasting our opinions. And if you put in your religion that you think all religions are stupid, if you put that in Facebook, well, that's going to be broadcast to your community. It's not just people that are going to come and look for it. No, it's going to be pushed out to the community.
So it's bigger than Big Brother, in other words, from the old 1984.
It's not bigger than Big Brother. You're right to a certain extent. Okay. It's got more potential impact than Big Brother, but we're doing it to ourselves. It's not Big mm-hmm. Brother going down and looking at us and trying to find the information and trying to pull it from us.
We're giving it willingly.
We're just broadcasting it. And that's what we're doing is we're broadcasting at that point. No different than we're doing on the radio right
now.
So
with kids, basically the bottom line is, as you're saying, they know more about it than most adults.
Okay, so how do you deal?
How do you deal with it? Because they can't give informed consent because they don't really understand the ramifications yet.
So adults got to find the magic. They got to find the magic in it. They got to look at it and get excited about it. Well, you do that by not judging to begin with, not by saying it's stupid. I don't understand the reason. You know, I was speaking in Edmonton at a cyber safety conference, and I had a teacher, an educator, in my session say that he didn't allow his kids to use MSN because he wanted them to have real relationships. This is the kind of judgment that just is abhorrent to me. Here's the problem. When I was kids, maybe you were the same thing, mm-hmm. our parents didn't think that us talking on the phone to the girl was having a real face-to-face relationship. Our relationship with them couldn't... You've only talked to that girl on the phone. How do you know you have a crush on her? Well, I got a crush on her, you know? Because it was as real a communication to me talking on the phone as it was talking face-to-face. When you text back and forth, when you short text message in SMS, or when you chat on MSN, or when you send email back and forth, that's every bit as intimate. It's every bit as much a communication metaphor that speaks to your heart and speaks to your soul as speaking face-to-face and gazing in someone's eyes. And a lot of parents don't understand that. They don't accept that. They think that because this is the way that they were raised, that it's the way that thus it always will be. Communication's dynamic. Communication changes. Personal communication today can be abbreviations and short text messaging with smiley faces mm-hmm. as much as it can be holding hands. So we can't judge. So as adults, as the adult community, you can't dismiss the importance, the realness of the relationships and the impact and the technology. So that's kind of number one. You've got to accept it, and then you've got to go and engage it and find it yourself.
I was just going to ask, would you recommend surfing with your kid just to play kind of make it more of a family thing? Or
I don't recommend surfing with your kids. I mean, certainly I recommend making your kids your friends on Facebook. And I love the idea of people just having MSN up at work and being able to chat back and forth with their kids or to text message with their kids back and forth to engage in the technology and understand it. Right? Because, first of all, you've got to gain their respect. Think about your kids looking at you and saying, you know, we're going back to that thing of life skills.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, I thought my dad was an idiot when I was 17 years old. And then I kind of grew up a bit. It's like Mark Twain. He says, when I was 20 years old, I was embarrassed by my father. And then when I turned 30, I was really proud of how far that old guy had come in the last 10 years. You know, that whole maturing thing and understanding your parent. Well, when I was a kid at 17, I thought my dad was an idiot, even though he was better at everything in the world than I was. If my kid today thinks I'm an idiot, they've got abject proof. My dad doesn't even know how to surf the net. my dad can't send a text message. Those are really important things. Mm-hmm. Those are part of their lives. And if we demonstrate to our children that we don't understand those things, that we can't comprehend them, that we're already obsolete. So exactly what sort of authority are we going to speak to them with? So it's not just understanding it. It's engaging with it. It's dominating the technology. It's becoming a part of it. So you got to find your muse within the technology. So how did it start for me? It started with me with groups. I love fly fishing. I'm an old fuddy. I like catching fish with fly fishing. So I joined fly fishing boards, and I started to chat back and forth with people in fly fish. You find a place to engage, and you find a place to own the technology and make it your own and make it a part of your life. It's not going to diminish you as a human being. Nobody out there is being diminished by technology by engaging in it. But it's now our responsibility, because the next generation coming up is looking to us for leadership. And if we don't understand it, we're not going to be able to lead.
Very, very, very well put.
I have one really weird question just before we...
Oh, I was going to say, there's a few more pointers.
There's a lot of pointers.
Just make sure your kids' screen names don't say too much about them.
Oh, yeah, practical.
And how much information, where it's like stuff that you should be comfortable just saying.
You should have a set of rules. Some people set a contract up with their kids, making sure that they don't say their school name, their teacher's names, the city they live in, their real age, their real name. None of those things should ever go forward. I mean, that's just really good practical. And there's lots of really good places on the net. Cyberwise.ca is a good place. The RCMP, they've got some great advice sites for parents on dealing with cyber safety for their kids. And that's practical information that people can find with a quick Google search. You know, they should at least get to that level, yeah.
Okay, good. This is the kind of stuff I got to put on juice boxes right away.
Amen.
All right, so your weird questions?
I was actually going to ask, a while ago on Breakfast Television on City TV, we actually had a guest on, Richard Smith. He's one of the communications professors at SFU. And what he'd mentioned, because we were talking about Facebook, and his belief was that eventually we're not going to have computers. We're probably going to be just doing everything via phone because of the text thing. And with Facebook, like when you're just showing us like what was written on your wall, where you just turned and flipped your phone around and passed it to Julia and I. Do you think at some point that could be used as a honing device in a not so great way? Or is that more conspiracy stuff?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Back to the future.
Yes and no. Okay. We're mobile technology. That is a bit of a non sequitur. Congratulations.
Sorry.
I don't know how they're going to like home in on where you are. Phones now have GPSs, and the GPS can talk to the different parts of the operating system. So theoretically, you could have a telephone that will tell you where you are. We've got them for kids. Mm-hmm. We've got little cell phones that both Telus and Rogers have that you can purchase for your kids that do things called, they set up geofences, that you can tell where your kid is when they're in the range of the school, because the phone, if the GPS triggers, then when the kids leave the boundary around the school, it sends a text message to your phone telling you Junior's left the school area now. And you've got that technology. So we have that technology. That's all part of it.
Is there a way a predator could actually, if, say, somebody lost their phone or something like that, where they'd be able to do that somehow through the net? Or am I just getting
I guess there is a way. There are probably ways, and it's going to make some good movies. it would be difficult. I would think that I guess so. I'm not really afraid of it.
Cool. So it's no reason for our listeners to be afraid either.
Don't suddenly flush your phones down the toilet because you're afraid somebody's following you with it.
No, I wouldn't want to have to plunge that up, actually.
No.
It'd be kind of disturbing.
There's a lot of really, really great great pointers that you've given tonight, and I think that there's so many more. I mean, just like you were saying earlier, once they post information online, you can't take it back. That goes for kids, that goes for anybody.
Adults.
Warning your young people in your life about the dangers of flirting with strangers online. They have no idea who they're flirting with and what the heck's going on there. I think the one about trusting your gut, if you have any suspicions, is really, really important. I have a couple of young people in my life. One's 12, one's 14. Very, very flirtatious young ladies, having a good time on the internet and doing things. You know, when I looked over the shoulder a few times in babysitting, I was quite appalled at what I was reading and looking at. Afraid for them, but being their babysitter and kind of like one of their kind of friends almost, didn't know what to say. So, you know, this was a year ago or so, and they're still okay, and there's still nothing horrible happening to them so far. Mm-hmm. But I can just imagine as a parent how difficult it is to actually monitor, even when the computer is in the living room and you are trying to monitor your children. You say here that if you're concerned that your child is engaged in risky online behavior, that parents can actually search the sites and see what they've posted and what they've been up to. And
sure, there's histories on the internet, so mm-hmm. you can tell, you know, and all unfortunate kids are savvy enough that they know how to erase that sort of stuff. You know, none of this stuff with technology changes what good parenting is. You know, the rules for parenting.
In a nutshell, which is what?
Dialogue with your kids. You know, if you're not engaged in your kids' lives, if you're not talking to your kids, if you're not part of their
connecting with them
on a daily basis, you know, you're not going to be a good parent no matter what you do. No matter what, you can put all sorts of filters up on your computer, and you can block access to the internet, and you can do all those other things. But if you're not talking to your kids, if you're not understanding them, if you're not making an effort to engage in their lives, well, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball. You know, it's not going to be very easy. So those things don't change. And the forces that are on us today with the social networking sites today and the changes that have happened to us now, don't think that they're going to change. Don't think that now it's going to stop. And okay, if I learn about Facebook, I'm golden. I'm not going to have to learn again. Sorry. Next year there's going to be something new, and we can do this show all over again, and we won't even mention Facebook or MySpace. It's not going to get easier.
Yes.
It's just going to keep evolving.
All right. I don't know if you have any last words or things to say, but I think we need to wrap the show up.
Yeah. But thank you so much for being on the show.
It's been my pleasure.
I hope we can have you back again.
Great.
It's been an honor having you, and you're a fabulous radio voice. I'm always so grateful when somebody knows how to speak on the radio and be engaging and have a great voice, and you've done all that. And
has a lot of really good things to say.
So many. I mean, that's I was talking about the gravy part. But it's just,
I'm blushing now. Thank you
so much. Yeah. And one of the things you can do on radio is hide. Nobody can really see how you feel.
Unfortunately, I'm on TV, so the people actually know how I look. So.
Oh, well, you're a good-looking guy. So, and you know what? Thank you for the parenting tips. I think for the parents out there, so helpful. It's a dangerous road. It could be fun, though. I don't know. I've not been down it, but
I know I want to be there one day.
So someday. I will. Yes, someday, one day.
And that's not an invitation to either any of our stalkers out there to impregnate any of us. Especially Steve.
Well, thankfully, Steve can't get pregnant. All right, so...
You never know what the future may bring.
You never know. I'm going to be at Burning Man next week, but Caroline and Dan Six are going to be back with the female perspective on the art of pickup. Now, we lost the podcast last week, again, because Julia just messed it up. So hopefully Caroline will get it straight next week, because I'm going to try this week to get it straight. And if you can't get it straight next week, you'll be missing that one as well.
I may ask Marion. I may pout and pout since... Hans Klass's Misery Hour is up next, and beautiful, sexy Marion is here, and I may bat my big brown eyes and ask him very, very, very politely if he can please help me podcast.
Right. So, in the meantime, enjoy this ambient music and Marion's super sexy voice.
It's not ambient anymore.
It's
not ambient anymore?
What is it then? God, help us update our stuff.
Obviously, you don't listen. That's
we don't, because we're too busy driving all of our guests home, honey.
Maybe it sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, nobody listens anyway, so it wasn't...
I'm sure a lot of people do. You have a lot of callers, a lot of listeners. So, yes, and we'll be back next week at the Sexy Hour of 10 o'clock. Or do you have a caller? What's happening here?
I've got a caller.
All right, well, Marion, this is going over time.
That's quite all right.
Fine with it. Fine.
We're
here
just
we are. What's
your caller?
Yes, we will.
Next, go.
Oh, okay, we're just going to put you on air one moment, please.
Hi. Hello? You're on Juicebox. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, okay. We should remember, too, that most children that are molested are not molested by strangers they met out there in cyberspace, the rapist lurking in the bushes and so on, but it was someone that they already knew, such as a neighbor, a relative, or so on. We mustn't get too worried about what is could be out there and concentrate our attention on what is really there in the lives of children.
Do you have any comment on that, Steve? Thanks, caller. Yeah.
I think he's probably right.
Okay, excellent. Thanks. Thanks very much.
Brevity is next to godliness, isn't it? Yeah, it's somebody that you know. That's certainly a
most rapes and statistic. Sexual assaults happen from people you know. Yes, that's very true. All right. Well, thank you very much, Marion, for letting. Yes, Caroline.
No, thank you. I was actually going to say stats are one in four teenage girls actually report that they met strangers online, and one in seven boys admitted that they did too. And while most of these are internet friends, quote unquote, and they do turn out to be a teen or preteen, it's not always the case. And unfortunately, there are kids that are dying and stuff in the hands of internet child molesters and stuff like that. So that is happening. And 100% of the kids that were molested by sexual predators went willingly to a meeting, apparently. They may have thought that they were meeting a cute 14 or 15-year-old boy or girl and had no idea who it is. Hmm. And there's actually a great group called Perverted Justice who is actually having adults actually infiltrate and pose as young kids in chat rooms to try and lure out. And I think they're on Dateline, actually. Just to help and protect. And that's about it.
We're way over time now.
Okay. Man, thank you, darling.
Thank you.
And we will be back next week
Juice
at the Sexy Hour at 10 o'clock.
Education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Juice Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.